The attendance. For attendance, we have Chair Jennifer Campbell, Alder John Uguerre, Alder Dina Nina Martinez Rutherford, Alder Harrington McKinney, Angela Jones, Tiffany Malone is excused, Megan Miller is here, and Matt Fair is here. That concludes the attendance. Chair, the floor is yours.
Great, thank you. Thanks, Ben. Let us, I'm going to see if Lynette wanted us to do any icebreakers this time, but I didn't see her pop on. So we will.
Why, thank you for the reminder.
You're welcome.
Yes, so Alder, let's see, we have a new Alder here. So Alder Harrington McKinney is a return member from our CDBG committee. So we are happy to have her back on our committee. If we were in real world, this would be a lot easier and a lot more streamlined. But before we hop into disclosures and minutes and all of those things, I would just sort of love informally to go around and everyone introduce yourself to the Alder. And because we love icebreakers, but we're being recorded, we'll make it very PG, and it is your favorite ice cream flavor. So Jennifer, if you'd like to start.
Okay, hold on. There she is. Okay, I was just making sure Alder Harrington McKinney's on. Welcome back to the committee. We're happy to have you here. Jenny Campbell, I am chair. I am almost out on my 10 years in March, which I just realized recently. Favorite ice cream flavor is cookies and cream, although I'm trying to be gluten-free now, so it's very sad. I will pop it over to, let's go to Matt.
Hey, Barbara, Matt Fair, good to see you. I like a lot of flavors, but I'll go with the old standby of mint chocolate chip.
Do ba ba ba. Look at Alder Uguerre, you're up.
Right.
No nicknames this time.
Hello, Barbara. I'm the that old guy that sits next to you in the Common Council, and my favorite ice cream flavor is chocolate chip cookie dough.
Awesome. Alder Harrington McKinney, why don't you go next?
I'm a plain Jane. I like vanilla.
There you go. My dad always would order a vanilla shake. That was every time. Alder Dina Nina.
That's me. Hi, Barbara. my favorite is the chocolate shops. This just got serious.
Mm-hmm.
So trying to keep it PG for you.
Thank
but,
you. Yeah.
I guess.
For all the kids watching at home.
Yes, it's the perfect salty and sweet ice cream ever.
Awesome. Thanks, Angie.
Welcome back, Alder Mother Harrington McKinney, as I refer to you as. My favorite ice cream is gluten-free peanut butter ice cream, and it's delicious. Delicioso.
Okay, I'll have to try. I need to know why you call her mother. Have you been a nun, or is she actually your mom or something else?
Let's just say when I moved to Madison, she was full of all wonderful advice.
And okay, so got it, got it. Okay. Helpful. All right, Tiffany's out today. Let's Megan, favorite ice cream.
Hi there, Megan Miller. Like Matt, I am a mint chocolate chip girly. So that's my fave.
Awesome. Nice to see you. I think we got everyone. Is Lynette, are we doing staff or are you good?
We're good. We have enough of us on.
Okay, fair enough. All right, let's do the minutes from the May meeting. Anybody want to throw their hand up? Give me a little motion. Give me a little thanks, Matt. Second by Alder Uguerre. Any discussion of the minutes? Hearing none. We will, as always, take these by unanimous consent. Alder Harrington McKinney.
Question, do I have to recuse myself because I was not present?
Fantastic.
Or is that not
question.
Standard?
I don't know. Lynette, you guys know what to do?
I can't get my video to work.
Oh, well,
I
we
mean,
can hear you.
yeah, okay, that's great. So yeah, that would be appropriate.
Okay, we'll have Alder Harrington McKinney recused and the rest in favor. Moving right along, disclosures and recusals. Oh no, wait, I went too fast. Public comment, I'm not aware of any.
There's no one registered to speak tonight.
Fantastic. Now, disclosures and recusals. Anybody? Great. That doesn't always happen. And if you can hear my dog barking, he's just doing it incessantly. And if you can't, it's just me that's going to go crazy tonight. So that's great. Next up, Kurt Paulson will join us to do a presentation on the depressing state of the federal funding. It's great.
Good afternoon, everyone. Can you hear me?
Yes.
Okay. So I wrote you a memo because it's important to get some of the footnotes and the citations for all this. It's on Legistar. I don't know if you had a chance to read it. So I'll just walk through it and then we can take some questions. So this is current as of today, but who knows what will actually happen in the
Hey,
future.
Kurt, before you get into it, could you just like, who are you?
Oh,
How'd you
yeah.
get here?
I know most of the people on the committee already.
Oh,
But
perfect.
yeah, my name is Kurt Paulson. I teach urban planning at UW-Madison, and I focus on housing and housing policy. And it's good to see so many people I know, including Angie Jones, the guru of all this, and Alder Harrington McKinney, and of course the CDD staff. So good to see you all. So where are we on the timeline? We are currently in the midst of federal fiscal year 2025. That was passed in March. So we are basically on a continuing resolution from fiscal year 2024. You may have heard of the process of reconciliation, which is a separate process from the federal budget process, but it's to make any kind of changes to current tax and spending policies, and that passed the House a few days ago, and it's the one big, beautiful bill act that is its official name. So, for many of the things you're interested in, you want to pay attention to the upcoming appropriations process. We have some hints of what's going to come through the president's budget request. But the full markup of the committee is in July. So if you have any interest in contacting your various federal representatives to share your views, now would be the time to do it. And obviously, I can't tell you what those views should be. Yeah. So, and there's the links to the current recommended 2026 appropriations levels by the president, which is a 1,000-page document. You can click through to the HUD justifications, but the more interesting is HUD has given more detailed documentation. So, just updating you on a lot of the issues that affect your committee. As first of all, number two here on consolidated plan, as you may be aware, any grant activities that the City of Madison receives requires submission of a consolidated plan. And in the past, that has involved an analysis of impediments to fair housing choice, including the one prepared about 4 or 5 years ago by then URPL student Matt Frater, now CDD staff Matt Frater. And recently updated by current URPL student Kaylee McCarthy. The notice is that jurisdictions are no longer required to prepare these analysis of impediments. There's nothing that stops Madison from continuing to do this analysis. And in fact, I think it would be best professional practice to continue to prepare the detailed analysis of impediments to fair housing choice. If you're reasonably new, if we haven't had a chance to read it, it's really well done. On the fair housing front, point three here, very recently the president had an executive order which is directing, for our purposes, the HUD secretary to to eliminate a disparate impact theory of liability. So we can get into that and what that might mean. This would largely reduce fair housing enforcement to discriminatory intent, which is harder to prove, and would remove disparate impact liability. This has been proposed, but HUD has not yet submitted any rulemaking on the topic. So with that, in fair housing, I know that the City of Madison is not an FHAP, Fair Housing Assistance Program certified unit of local government. I know there had been talk in years past of becoming one, but the funding available for that program is $26 million in the president's proposed budget. So you may be aware of the Fair Housing Center of Greater Milwaukee, which covers Madison, has a Madison office. The president's proposed budget would zero out all funding for nonprofits that do fair housing enforcement, education, or testing. Okay. And I'm moving quickly because you have all the documentation. We can have questions later. On the low-income housing tax credit, I suppose if you wanted to look for some good news in this report, the city uses a number of the tax credit programs or its in combination with its affordable housing programs. The One Big Beautiful Bill Act from the House does increase the amount of credits available for the next four calendar years, 26, 27, 28, and 29. So presumably for the state of Wisconsin, allocated from WIDA to potentially projects in Madison would probably be somewhere between two to four additional projects each year statewide, depending on the credit requested. This bill also reduces the 50% financed by test to 25%, which means that you could still get the 4% federal tax credits, probably combined with the state housing tax credits, for something less than 50% of the total project cost being financed by the private activity bond. Again, that's getting a little into the weeds, but the good news is there seems to be bipartisan support in the House and the Senate for expansion of the low-income housing tax credit availability. So very specifically to your committee, the president's fiscal year 2026 budget recommends $0 in funding nationwide for the CDBG program. So this would eliminate any direct funding to the City of Madison as an entitlement jurisdiction. I don't know when you have recently used a Section 108 loan guarantee program, but that would also be eliminated. On point six, the home program, the City of Madison, again, is an entitlement jurisdiction. I'm sorry, a participating jurisdiction. And the president's fiscal year 2026 budget proposes $0 in funding. So this would also eliminate those funds for rental assistance and for some of the home ownership programs that Maria has been working on. Okay. Point number seven, the five main rental assistance programs through the HUD rental assistance. And just to take a step back, even though each of these programs is slightly differently, they all use a common platform in terms of 30% of a tenant's income in rent. And so these are what we call deep subsidy programs. And I've listed them there in order of the federal spending. So the Section 8 vouchers or the tenant-based rental assistance nationwide is $36 billion a year. Project-based rental assistance through the Office of Multifamily Housing is about $17 billion. Public housing is about $9 billion, I'm rounding up. And then the more niche programs of the 202 for the elderly and 811 for persons with disabilities, which I don't think we have as many of those units in Madison. But the president's budget proposes to eliminate all five of these programs and instead to consolidate them into a state rental assistance program. There is no direct legislation or guidance as to what that state rental assistance program would involve. At some point in time, if this passes, the state would need to decide how to allocate these funds. The total amount of funds available, however, are reduced by about 44% from current spending levels. So, for your consideration, there are three main points in this proposal. And again, this is a proposal. Congress will mark this up in July. To the extent that this impacts programs that you are concerned about, or in Angela's case, actually administering with partners, you may want to inform your legislators as to how this would impact current households and programs. So, under the state rental assistance program that's proposed, there would be a 2-year time limit for all rental assistance for non-elderly, non-disabled households. It's not specified yet in the document as to how to determine whether all working age adults would have to qualify or just one. So that's an issue of concern. That's a substantial change to existing policy. Point B is that states would have flexibility in how to design their programs. And then point C here is that HUD envisions that states could move away from the deep subsidy design. So currently, again, rent would be limited to 30% of a tenant's income under current HUD housing assistance programs, with the subsidy paying the difference, and this would eliminate that. So we suspect that many states, to the extent that they didn't supplement or backfill these reductions in spending, would probably be forced to use a more shallow subsidy design to continue assistance to the same number of households. But again, the 2-year time limit would, I don't have the exact details. You could ask CDA for that as to how many non-elderly, non-disabled households currently in voucher assistance under the CDA would be impacted. And then the final point is that the spending level proposed for homelessness programs is about the same. There's a minor $25 million decrease, but the main change would be that there would be $0 allocated according to the Continuum of Care or Permanent Supportive Housing programs. Instead, it would be distributed in a block grant through the ESG program. So there's five main points there that I've pulled out from the legislation. It would eliminate kind of the housing first approach. It obviously eliminates the permanent and permanent supportive housing because of the time limits. Obviously, rapid rehousing programs, which we have, would still be permissible. It emphasizes self-sufficiency, rapid stabilization, and emergency housing solutions. In some of their other policy justification documents, the administration indicates that the current housing first approach, which underfunds emergency shelters and transitional housing, was the wrong policy. And so they want to encourage transitional housing and emergency shelters. The expansion of ESG would allow for payment of supportive services, which is a change in current policy. However, given that the total spending would be the same, communities would then have to choose between supportive services and housing programs, either through rapid rehousing or shelters. And then the funding formula, which has not been announced yet, would include measures of performance. This relates to stated administration policies to disincentivize communities that have highly visible unsheltered homelessness. Obviously, there's a lot more we could say about these programs, but that gives you a kind of a flavor of where the proposals are. And again, nothing has been finalized yet because the One Big Beautiful Bill Act is waiting Senate modification, and then we are early in the fiscal year 2026 budget process. And some of the authorizing legislation that would be needed to fundamentally change HUD rental assistance programs has not yet been released. So with that, I'll stop my share and we can have a if there's any questions. Sorry, that was really fast.
Thanks, Kurt. Super depressing. That's awesome. Angie, why don't you go ahead?
Thanks so much, Kurt. Always appreciate your presentations and the information that you're providing. I have a quick question on the very last piece where you're talking about the homeless services, and E states that it would be the funding formula would include performance. If I am not mistaken, it already does include performance. So are they looking to change that formula for performance, or what does that exactly mean?
It's not specified in the HUD documents. We can guesstimate what it might mean relative to other administration statements, but it would focus more on I actually don't want to speculate. So, yes, obviously there are performance metrics, but this has been a, if you remember the legislation proposed at the state of Wisconsin last year that would redirect DOA homelessness assistance for performance, some of those performance metrics were less about whether the household is able to stably maintain housing under a PSH sort of model. But instead would be how quickly you enforce let me take a step back and stop using coded language, right? We suspect that this is going to involve coercive mandatory placement for people who refuse shelter offers for particular reasons. Right. So under a current housing first approach, if a person experiencing homelessness refuses an offer of shelter because that shelter has something that is inconsistent with their needs or wants, they would not be in some ways penalized for that. So we suspect that those performance measures would involve that.
Okay.
But again, that's a suspicion. We don't have any actual language.
Okay. Thank you so much for that overview of the big bad bill.
Thanks, Angie. Other questions or comments from the committee members? I'm curious for what staff are. How staff are looking at this. Are you like planning? Are you contingency planning? Or do we just wait and see? I know there's just so much going on that contingency planning can feel like a futile effort. Lynette?
Yeah, I will say it's I think every day we're reading the headlines just like everybody else to see what comes out of the federal government. I'll say a couple things though. Since 2014, I think our elected officials have been ahead of the game in the fact that we have our affordable housing fund, where many other municipalities are still relying solely on home funds to create units every year. We have been able to leverage those affordable housing funds, extending our TIF districts with also some borrowing that has changed the game in what we do and what this committee does in support of development. So that work will continue because we have already identified that that was a need beyond the federal government. For our programs that do rely on home and CDBG, one of the things that we established a long time ago is we give all of our funds out, a majority of our funds out, I should say, as loans. And so, as the federal government potentially could decrease, or we have to pivot because they cut our budget completely. In hopes that maybe that program income will still be able to come to our local governments, that we can still use that money to our advantages. Those are some of the strategies that we are looking at implementing, depending on what they end up telling us, of trying to keep some of these programs going. Probably not to the scale of what we're at right now, but to be able to still have some type of safety nets, we hope that we can be able to pivot based off of what we hear.
Thanks. Helpful. Other questions from committee members? Comments? Angie?
Sorry, and I should have asked this before. I did notice too that it also ends the COC. And so, is there a plan in place about what happens with that body of work and that kind of collaboration? I'm assuming it would continue in some sense, but is there a backup plan for our wonderful coordinator?
I really can't right now kind of
Okay.
say what we would do on staffing level if federal funds are cut. Almost a majority of our staff in the CDBG unit have some type of federal funds that support their position. So again, it is something that we would look at. We would look at vacant positions and see where we can move money around on vacant positions. So on the staffing, I can't comment at this time. I will say though, for everyone's benefit, locally, our COC, our continuum of care, provides to our community over $6 million of funding for homeless support. So that would be a dramatic impact. Most of those funds go directly from HUD to our nonprofit agencies to support case management and rental assistance and rapid rehousing programs. So just thinking about that immediate loss of $6 million is quite astonishing. If I could put my CDA hat on for just one second, because we were just recently talking about it. So to give you a comparison also, on an annual budget for the Section 8 program, we receive locally about $25 million of rental assistance to support about 2,000 people on that Section 8 program. So again, a major impact to our local community, and that is just the city of Madison. Dane County has its own housing authority. And so something that the city would not be able to just step in and be able to look and support. So just giving you very big numbers of those impacts when we talk about changes or zeroing out or transitions.
Yeah, thanks so much for that. So much for that, Lynette. I know it's all very doom and gloom. Thank you.
Anything else? Questions
Sorry.
for Kurt? Comments? Questions for staff?
Jennifer.
Yeah. Oh,
Thanks.
sorry. Go
That's
ahead.
okay. So just sticking on that COC question or line of questions. My understanding, if I'm understanding this right, they'd zero out COC, but the total dollars would still be there. It would be an ESG, and it would be up to the state or us or locals to kind of come up with a new program. I suppose we don't know what guidelines or rules and regulations they'd have, but Kirk, can you explain that, or Jeanette or
Yeah,
Lynette,
so
sorry, somebody?
and then I'll let Lynette. The guidance says that it would be formula funded to states and localities. So presumably there would be some sort of formula funded grant, as there is now with ESG, and the city and or the county would be the equivalent of an entitlement community or a participating jurisdiction. It's unclear whether that would be at the county level or at the city level, and whether there'd be a sub-allocation from the state. So that's in terms of the funding. So there would probably be maybe not as significant a decline in actual dollar amounts, but it would have to wait to see what the regulations actually say as to what extent it ties the hands of the city or the county or the HSC from kind of doing what we're already doing.
Right. That's what I was. I mean, I guess we don't know the answer, but I'm just like, could we kind of just do what we're still doing under this new formula? I guess that'll be
Well,
move
but
on now.
we could not do permanent supportive housing because there'd be the 2-year time limit
Oh yeah.
on any housing assistance.
Okay. And by the way, thanks for being here, Kurt. Appreciate it.
Thanks, Matt. Alder, you again?
You're muted, sir.
He had his hand up.
No, I'm not muted. But this is for Kurt. Yeah, and thank you, Chair. So some number of these programs are now potentially configured as flowing through the state, with the state making those determinations. Do we know if there's been any anticipatory discussions at the State House on what they might have to do?
I am not aware of any.
I'm not surprised.
But you, if this is a concern, you could certainly reach out to I'm blanking on his name, at DACR, or certainly yeah, because that would presumably be the HUD funded agency to which these funds would go.
Okay, thank you.
Thanks for being here. Anything else? All right. Thanks, Kurt. Appreciate the overview. While it's not great news, it's good to have the information.
Thank you.
Up next, we have an approval for a rental rehab loan. Staff will take us through, but first, may I have a motion on the table? Thank you, Megan. Second from Angie. And then who from staff would like to talk to us about the rental rehab loan?
It is me.
Okay.
So you today are approving a rental rehab loan. The loan is actually only for $14,800. Our rental rehab program guidelines actually say we do not have to bring loans to you under $50,000. However, this is an employee, and out of my need of wanting always full disclosure, that we are granting any funds to a city employee, I wanted it on record that I am still bringing it to you as a committee, even though it's below the threshold that you normally would see on an agenda. So this is Lynette being full disclosure. So this is an individual that owns a rental property. They are looking to do some general landscaping, replacement of the windows, and some roof work. And so we are looking for your guys' approval. Again, the loan would be $14,800, and they would greatly appreciate that.
Questions or comments from the committee? I see none. We'll do it by unanimous consent. Anybody with an objection? Oh, Alder Harrington McKinney, please.
So it's not an objection, but a sense of appreciation, because I would have been one who had the question if awarding funding to a staff person or someone working for the city. And so I certainly appreciate the transparency that's coming forward, and I like that, and I just want to take the time to commend staff for doing that, because I absolutely would have been one who was raising the question. And so I have n no qualms about joining in and approving this. And again, I just wanted to lift up the fact that that transparency is so evident in this committee. And so I'm so glad that I'm back. I'm complete.
Thank you. That transparency, Lynette, you're hearing it. It is appreciated. So, by unanimous consent, we will approve that. Thank you for everyone. And we have one more agenda item, the 2025 Affordable Housing Fund map draft. I understand this is for discussion only, not a decision item. Matt will tell me I'm correct or I'm
That
wrong.
is correct. And can you see the
Yes.
screen I'm sharing here?
Yes.
All right, perfect. So I will keep it fairly short this evening. This is a process that y'all are mostly familiar with, comes back before you every single year, but we'll talk through it just a little bit. We are, as you know, gearing up towards RFP season, as I'm sure Jim will talk about in just a little bit. One of those RFPs is our Affordable Housing Fund Tax Credit RFP. So we have been creating a map similar to this for near a decade now. And this is this year's version of it. So this map helps guide our funding both for our tax credit RFP and then in off years, our non-tax credit RFP as well for rental housing development. That's not running this year, but we do anticipate that coming again next year. Just as a brief reminder of what some of the colors on this map mean, as a city, we've identified one of our key priorities is to build housing near transit. So we do have in purple our preferred transit-oriented development areas. These are areas that we have identified in multiple ways as a city, whether it be our metro network redesign, bus rapid transit, or our comprehensive plan growth priority areas as areas that are the most desirable for intensity of development. We are following that up with this map. There are areas that are within 15 that have a transit frequency of 15 minutes or less at noon on weekdays. So the best transit service that you can get in the city. The one thing I will note about that is we have a couple different TOD things or that are called TOD within the city. Our preferred TOD area is just a little slightly different than the transit-oriented development zoning overlay, if you're familiar with that. So as part of the approval of that overlay process, they included the entire ODANA plan area within it. We're sticking within 1/4 mile of the transit lines itself. So just want to be very transparent about that. And then we have our green areas, which are eligible. We call them core transit areas. Those are areas that have transit service at a 30-minute or greater frequency. So within 16 minutes to 30 minutes. Again, great transit access throughout the city. Those two areas are where we're allowing new construction activities through this RFP process. And have historically allowed new construction activities through the RFP process, obviously with a preference for the TOD area, there just being a greater level of transit there. Preservation and rehab areas are areas in MAV. They're ineligible for new construction, although we do allow preservation of income and rent-restricted housing to come in through this RFP citywide. So it could be in any area, just no new construction allowed within the preservation and rehab areas. And then the last thing I think I would say is our limited eligibility areas. So one of the things that we've gotten out of discussions through this process, again, over the past 10 plus years, is there are some intricacies within sites that we want to be aware of and communicate to folks as they come in and potentially seek city financing for some of these developments. There have been historically three main reasons that an area would be limited eligibility. One is if it's within the F-35 contours surrounding the airport, we make that limited eligibility. We make limited eligibility areas that are in close proximity to the interstate or principal arterial roads. That's essentially the Beltline, where we think some extra consideration is due for any development proposals there. And then finally, it was areas with explosive hazards. So think in-ground tanks that are remnants of some site in the past. So we've always said that developments in these areas need to address the concerns that make them limited eligibility and be generally outstanding projects for us to consider them. We do have one new limited eligibility area this year that I do just want to call out. So on the map here, you see 21 in this section of the map, Census Tract 21. We do have a limited eligibility area here, just north of the 21 in our purple transit-oriented development area. One of the things that we talk about in this RFP is ensuring that there is income and rent-restricted affordable housing available in areas that have a lot of naturally occurring affordable housing to make sure that folks don't have to move as home prices appreciate, as rental prices appreciate. But we do track concentration of assisted housing overall. That is an area that has seen a fairly drastic increase in the amount of income and rent restricted affordable housing over the past handful of years, to where it is now fairly high in terms of overall concentration in our map when we go together and look at it. So as staff in our draft map here, we're putting that together as a limited eligibility area. It's an area where we would still consider funding. But as with our other areas, we say things in the RFP like needs close coordination with building inspection and with planning and zoning in order to address the concerns. In this area, it would be close coordination with CDD staff more than likely to ensure that any housing that goes into there has everything we would want to see support services available to folks. I think with that, I will leave it. As I said, we are in RFP season right now, and we do anticipate that the actual tax credit RFP will be following up with committee shortly, so you can see the requirements, preferences, policies contained within that as well.
Great. Thank you, Matt. Questions, comments from the committee members? Angie.
Thanks so much for that presentation, Matt. On the map, you said that the kind of like orange color line was limited, right? And you also mentioned that anything like the Beltline corridor. So would that Beltline corridor include like the Allied Drive area, or is that not part of that limited area?
So the limited eligibility area goes over whatever area is underneath it. So I'm just going to share one more time here so we can take a look at it. It is in some ways an overlay. And so when you look at Allied here, the majority of that is actually preservation and rehabilitation.
Okay.
And then we have some eligible areas that sort of go around there with limited eligibility over the top.
Okay. Thank you so much.
Yep.
Appreciate that.
Thanks, Angie. Otto, you there?
Thanks, Chair. Matt, would you mind bringing that?
I knew it was going to happen.
Yes. It's coming. Thank you. Mm-hmm. Thank you. Okay, so per your explanation, these areas are based on distance from the transit corridor mainline.
Correct.
It doesn't follow specific lot lines as such, correct?
Correct. That is another difference from the transit-oriented development zoning overlay. Yep.
So this is just kind of a weird procedural question, but it kind of came up when I saw this map and soon after a discussion I had recently. So what gets interesting, I guess, would be a piece of property right at mm-hmm. right at the calculated distance here as best we can on a non-detailed map. What's the recommendation for someone who would consider looking at an RFP, but they're just close to falling into no man's land or rehab only or something like that? Mm-hmm. Should they at least have a discussion about it?
Yeah, if someone is considering that, I would encourage them to talk to us. So we've actually had that situation come up in the past. And what we have done in the past is if the majority of the parcel is actually within the preferred TOD, mm-hmm. we would tend to default to that.
Okay. Just to be a little more specific. So I see that, you know, we have the obvious corridor formed by the BRT, but it extends south of the BRT line along Whitney Way down and appears to stop at O'Dana Road. And some of that area that's listed as rehab only is really focused on employment, preferred and avoiding too much proximity. But for instance, there's some for the GFLU, there's just on the border of that some other mixed use, you know, either community mixed use property and so forth that's owned that's right on the border. And that'd be the kind of question. Somebody looking at something that looks like it could be interesting for affordable housing might or might not need the kind of assistance we do through this targeted area map. But I had before I tell them, well, you at least ought to have a discussion. I wanted to get a sense of just how tight those borders need to be.
Yeah, so the borders are fairly tight. They are driven by proximity to transit. We do work on this map with planning. At the same time, we know that there are sometimes that the map is not entirely perfect in its alignment, which is why I wouldn't want folks to look at a map and just say, well, I'm for sure out, or well, I'm for sure in. We would still encourage them to reach out and have that conversation. So if you're having those conversations, I would still say, send folks our way. The actual coming soon RFP page is up on the website, CDD Funding Opportunities website, and people are beginning to reach out and hold those conversations. So we would be more than happy to talk to them about it. In the meantime, we can take a look at that again with planning as well.
Thank you.
I will just say in the past, and maybe it was last year or the year before, I can't quite recall, but we had an example of a development that was, they thought that they should be in the right area. And we had a pretty lengthy discussion at committee about it. I think when you have an RFP, it's important to maintain the integrity of the requirements. And so you don't end up in a situation where you're granting exceptions. And so to have that conversation with staff, certainly, but if staff were to bring a question of whether or not we committee should make an exception, I tend to not favor those. That's just, but I'm just one person.
Appreciate that, Chair.
Yeah.
I want to give the right advice, which
For
would
sure.
probably be no, it's not. That's not be qualified.
Matt will tell you if it's in the map or it's not in
Yeah.
the
But you can at least ask.
Yeah, for sure.
You don't get a penalty for asking the question.
Right. Yeah. Other questions or comments from committee? All right. Seeing none, thank you, Matt. Thanks for all the work on the map. I'm sure there are long hours that go into this that we don't see. We just see the very colorful output. And with that, da-da-da-da, staff report. Jim, what's going on?
Hi, everybody. No need to keep you any longer tonight, as Matt alluded. Summertime is road construction time in this division. It means it's RFP time. So we've got the Homeless and Housing Stability Services RFP that's currently out with applications due on the 27th of June. The home ownership, we're just working through a few complications from on the federal funding side of that, and next month we'll be releasing the tax credit rental development RFP. So keep your fans ready, because things will soon begin to hit them.
Great. That's it. Okay.
That's it.
Fantastic. Thanks everyone for being here. We will see you in July. I will take a motion from Matt to adjourn, and I will take a second from Alder Dina Nina to adjourn, and we will have a unanimous vote to see y'all next month. Thanks everyone.